welcome to Premier Podcast Euro Special, where three lads discuss all things Euro 2024. On today's episode, it's match day as England play Slovenia, with the Three Lions needing 3 points to finish top of Group C. We'll check in live with Ross, our international correspondent from Cologne. What changes should Gareth Southgate make for the team, if any, tonight? And why are ex-England players so negative in their English coverage? We'll finish with a roundup of the rest of the action, including late drama in both Group A and Group B's deciding fixtures. I'm your host, Alex Murphy, and once again, I'm joined by Tom Lawrence, but not Tom Gallagher, who is currently enjoying the sunshine at Glastonbury Festival. We're actually going to cross over to Germany straight away to hear from Ross, reporting from Cologne.
Greetings to the Pyramid Podcast, checking in from Cologne on match day three for England. The trip has been an absolute banger, I'm not going to lie. Serious amounts of German ale have been consumed. Yeah, the buzz around everywhere we've been in Germany has been absolutely class. Made it to Dortmund, been up to Frankfurt, obviously, for the second game. Less said about the game, the better. But every city we've been to has been superb. And obviously, loads of England now in Cologne for tonight. Last night was pretty lively down in the square. Got quite a few Slovenia as well, actually. But yeah, we need to turn up tonight, don't we, and play ourselves into some form. Kane needs to stay up top. We need to be more fluid front to back. But I'm still hopeful. I've not seen anything aside from maybe Spain, who look miles better than us. So yeah, we really do need to put on a performance tonight, not just a win, and get ourselves into some form, look into the last 16. Yeah, cheers, boys.
Thanks again, Ross, and enjoy the game tonight. Laura, Ross spoke there of a need for 3 points to start with, but a bit of an upturn in performance. And that's really what everyone wants, isn't it? Win the group, but see some good individual displays and hopefully some goals.
Yeah, I think that coming into a tournament when you're favourites, just getting results isn't good enough. Because if it was, the 4 points that we had right now would be fine and everyone would be happy with that. But we get 4 points, we're top of the group, and the whole country's in uproar about the tactics, the people in what positions, even the ex-pundits are digging out our captain and other senior players as well. So we need to go out, or the boys need to go out and put on a performance that shuts up half the country that is being negative or feels in a negative way at the moment. And that will stand us in good stead, because you do want to go into the last 16 with a bit of momentum. So one, hopefully we can see a more fluid performance tonight. We can see a bit more control on the ball. And obviously, two, we can get the results to finish top of the group, because it looks like the rest of the competition is shaping up favourably again for us, which it has done in quite a lot of the other tournaments in terms of what teams we might get to play in the latter stages. So for me, the most important thing is still the 3 points. You want to be top of the group. We want to peak at the right time, so I'm not worried that we haven't shown our best stuff yet, but it would be nice to see certainly a much better performance than what we had on Tuesday, because that, for anyone's standards, was obviously below par.
And look, there's been loads of sort of insight and reports and coverage about the display against Denmark, and obviously Serbia was not seen as the best performance, but we did win. But ultimately, right, we're on 4 points. We're on to be on 7 points if we beat Slovenia, who Slovenia have had a couple of decent displays so far, but let's have it right. They're 57th in the world, I think. I think they're below Saudi Arabia, Iran, you know, an Iran side that we've beaten comprehensively before in competition. So it's highly likely that England are going to be top of their group at the end. And that's job done, right?
Yeah. And I think we have a propensity, particularly in this country, to concentrate on the negative stuff, don't we? So everyone's concentrating on a little bit of an imbalance in midfield, which is obviously a new starter in Trent there, and maybe the balance of play having Phil Foden on the left. But the rest of the team, I mean, Harry Kane's been dug out, but he's already got one and probably could have really on another day had two if that one against Serbia went in. The defence, our expected XG is the lowest, or XG against whatever it is the lowest in the tournament. I don't like stats, but everyone else does. So we have to look at those and say we're defending really well. There's actually quite a lot of positives also to be taken from the fact that we've played by everyone's standards really below par and still no one can beat us. We've conceded one goal in 180 minutes of football. That came from a 25-yard pile driver. And no one else has really, other than that, been able to get close. And we've got the 4 points that we need. So, yeah, let's get the job done against Slovenia tonight. Let's try and do it in a little bit more style, but let's just try and be happy that we're already through to the knockout stages, and tonight is about performance, building on momentum, and hopefully getting ourselves in the right side of the draw.
Feels like we've kind of become a bit accustomed to like beating teams quite comprehensively. I touched on the Iran game there, and there's been Panama in a previous competition. We've had like Ukraine in the quarterfinals, so I think we won 4-0 against them. And I think there's a bit of almost like a expectation now that it's got to be a comprehensive win, and there's got to be three or four opportunities to chuck your pint in the air and speak about the brilliance of it. But Carl Walker was quite clever after the game when he spoke about how it's competition football and it's not that easy. And actually, a point against Denmark means that their destiny's still in their own hand. And some other players have said, similar to your point, we've not played great, but we're still top of the group and still on 4 points, and we're still on to go through as top of the group. So maybe just a bit of perspective from the English fans needed, because it can be a lot worse, as we're seeing with other teams in the competition.
What's the point in being negative? Like, we all know that good things come in football with a feel-good factor. We might as well celebrate being top of the group with an abundance of talent in our squad that's capable of kicking on, like they have in the last couple of tournaments, particularly the last Euros. The last Euros, we drew 0-0 with Scotland in the second game. And I don't remember the outpour of negativity being quite as much as it is now, but it definitely would have been low. And then we went and beat Germany, and we went and thrashed Ukraine 4-0, like you just said. But it's absolutely fine. Just leave it. Moan when we get knocked out. Judge everyone then, depending on the manner of it. But for the minute, we're in the tournament, and they're going to play an awful lot better if they feel like they've got the country and the fans and the pundits behind them, rather than picking them apart because of two games. But on the whole, it's been quite good for a while now.
Felt a bit snowball-y, didn't it? Because we sat and watched the Denmark game, and it kind of crossed back at half-time, didn't it, to the BBC studio. And Micah Richards, and I think Rio Ferdinand and Gary Lineker, and you had Alan Shearer in the commentary gantry, they were like speaking as if it was like time to get rid of Southgate mid-competition. Micah Richards is like, yeah, enough's enough now, not good enough, you know, we can't do this much more. I just wonder why there seems to be, from really mainstream media and those guys, probably when you think of England coverage and British football coverage, other than maybe the Sky pundits, it's that match of the day kind of BBC team, why they've chosen to go so negative. But I know you were a big fan of Harry Kane's kind of retort and response to it, kind of dampening it a bit and just calling for that kind of calmness and positivity.
Yeah, well, the pundits are allowed to have their say, and they've always done that. But one of the differences now is, on top of halftime and full-time analysis, they've got their own podcasts. And on their own podcast, they can use stronger language because they're not on the BBC or ITV or whatever. And the question that was put to Harry Kane wasn't, what do you think about Gary Lineker saying that you're not running behind enough? It was, what do you think about Gary Lineker describing the England performance as shit? And at that point, it doesn't become analysis anymore. That's just an insult at the English football team, who, by the way, the vast majority of that squad and Gareth Southgate have gone far further in tournaments already and been a lot closer to winning something than any of these pundits ever have, unless they bring in someone from the 1966 winning team, which they're not going to do. So I just think it's audacious for someone like Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer, even. He was over the top, I thought, on his punditry the other day. I know everyone likes to jump on the bandwagon when we're not playing very well and talk about how crap we are. But it's not, Michael Richards as well, it's not time to pull Harry Kane out of the team. What are you talking about? There was an article the next day going, how can we get the best out of Harry Kane? And I just wanted to crop his Wikipedia England stats, where it says something like 95 games, 68 goals. To get the best out of Harry Kane, we need to keep doing the same. It's worked unbelievably well. He's already won a golden boot at the World Cup. He's already captained us in a European Championship final. These guys know what they're doing more than you do. Gary Lineker, Alan Shearer, Michael Richards, and the rest of them. They've gone further already. They've tasted further on in the competition than you have. So I think he had the right of reply there, and he did it very respectfully, Harry Kane. He didn't say, oh, it was a load of rubbish. He just said, look, full respect, but just remember, you've been here, and what he wanted to probably say is, done worse than us. But what he did say is, not won anything either. So all's fair and love and war. But what Alan Shearer did say yesterday was, they've always got the right of reply on the pitch. So hopefully Harry Kane goes out and scores two or three tonight, and that will shut the likes of Gary Lineker and Alan Shearer up a little bit on the negative side, because it just seems to be a stretch further than they'd normally go this time for some reason. And I don't see why.
It's almost like they're trying to guess ahead that this will probably be Southgate's last tournament if he fails to win it. And even if he did win it, he might want to go out on a high. So they're almost creating this kind of like 2 week out, 1 week out, however it is until England are in the competition or until they've won it, of if they don't go on and win it, they can talk about, well, we covered this after the Denmark game, that the signs were there, it wasn't great type thing. And so, yeah, I think you're right that it's been really, really over the top, and all the journalists are kind of jockeying for position to be able to be like, well, look, we did tell you, you all told us to keep the positivity, but look what happened. But yeah, not great to see.
And also, Henry Winter, the journalist, came out and he said, I agree, you know, Lineker and Shearer have the right to do what they want. The England team aren't going to be or aren't going to progress well if they've just got a bunch of cheerleaders behind them. They are if they get constructive criticism. So they're not listening to Alan Shearer. Harry Kane isn't going to change his game because Gary Lineker wants him stretching defences more. He's going to do exactly what he's been doing and what Gareth Southgate wants him to do and what the plan is with the team. We don't have to call us cheerleaders. It's okay to support your team. It's okay for your team to have a bad game and still support them and still be behind them and still tweet positively and speak positively about them because of what they've done before. We've still got a team of player of the season winners from La Liga and from the Premier League and the top scorer in the Bundesliga. And actually, Mark Guay, for example, was a massive positive. Someone that we thought, or a position that we thought was going to be a weakness this tournament, just seems to have completely gone off topic now because he's good. No one's talking about that. No one's talking about the defence having the highest or the lowest conceded XG or whatever it's called because they're doing well. No one's talking about that. They're talking about Harry Kane not running in behind defences. They're not talking about Harry Kane not scoring goals because he scored one. So they can't say that. They've got to say he's not running behind stretching defences now. Well, he doesn't do that. He drops in and he scores bag loads of goals and he'll continue to do so regardless of what anyone says in the media.
Well, let's look ahead to game against Slovenia then. I think maybe if England had beaten Denmark and were on 6 points and the group was tied up, we'd have seen what Spain did yesterday, which is to play almost your players who haven't played so far, that second 11, if you will. But it feels like with us still needing 3 points and potentially there being a bit of cohesion still needed to be found with the team, that he might go as strong as he can. But expecting to see maybe one change in midfield with Conor Gallagher going in. Is there anything else you'd change to that starting 11?
It's so difficult because the obvious one is the left-hand side. I just think it's more of a balance thing than a individual thing. Like Phil Foden deserves to be in the team. And if you had a left-sided left-back who could overlap and allow Foden to push in more naturally, that would be fine. But what's happening at the moment is Phil Foden actually had quite a lot of joy in the Denmark game, but not from the left-hand side. It was all coming inside and doing work where maybe you'd be expecting Harry Kane or Jude Bellingham to be picking up positions, and it's leaving us unbalanced and a little bit impotent on the left-hand side. So I can understand why there's a lot of talk of wanting Anthony Gordon to come in, or even Eze or anyone like that on the left-hand side that will give us more natural width. And maybe he'll do that. I definitely would like to see Anthony Gordon at some point tonight. It sounds like we're going to start with Phil Foden again on the left. I'm not as irate with my opinion that we need to change it on the left-hand side at the moment. It's definitely not ideal. It'd be much better if we had Luke Shaw there, or it'd be much better if Phil Foden was as good as he is, but a natural left-winger. But at some point, we need to see Anthony Gordon because he hasn't had 1 minute in the tournament so far. And if we are going to change to having a little bit more width and a bit more pace in behind, which I think will help Harry Kane having that on both sides as well, then it's going to be Anthony Gordon. And he hasn't had a minute yet. So hopefully we'll see him at some point tonight. But it sounds like Foden's going to start. I know you've got quite a strong view on that.
Yeah, I think that Foden and Bellingham are occupying each other's space. And I know Bellingham was really good in the first game. Unbelievable. I think you're bang on. Phil Foden, I think the negativity that surrounded the whole performance masked actually Phil Foden being really good, albeit, as you say, maybe out of where he's situated on the pitch. But that's clearly a tactic for him to be able to drift inside. But he had the shot that hit the post. He had another one which he cut in, which for Man City, you know, normally goes into the top corner, but just sat up. He went for a run, didn't he, through the midfield where he just bypassed people. And you're like, well, here you go, this is Phil Foden. But he clearly wants to do that centrally. And I don't know what the tactic is there, whether it's let's get Bellingham and Foden in there and completely overload that part of the pitch. But for whatever reason, so far, it doesn't seem to have worked. So in my mind, Jude Bellingham is that good. And I know he played false nine for Real Madrid or 10 for Real Madrid, but he can absolutely play, I think, in central midfield. If the whole narrative from Southgate is that they've not been able to replicate what Calvin Phillips was doing for England in that role, I'm not sure long-term Conor Gallagher is the answer for that against really, really top opposition. So in my mind, could we not drop Jude Bellingham in with Declan Rice into the midfield? Jude Bellingham is still going to get forward and make those runs and be in the box. And then you'd have Foden in the 10, and then you free up that left wing berth for an out and out winger. But what that might come down to then is that if this competition was 3 years ago, you'd have had Jack Grealish, Marcus Rashford, Raheem Sterling to pick from, who all probably trusted Gareth Southgate players, but none of them have had any sort of form to go through it. And maybe he just doesn't currently trust Anthony Gordon or Eze to come in from the start and play that left wing role. And that's why he's persevering with it. But that'd be my personal move, would be to drop Jude back in and Foden into the 10.
Why don't you think he wants to drop Jude in next to Rice? Because this is the team, or this is the midfield that we played against Iran at the start of the last tournament, which was only 18 months ago. And it was Rice and Bellingham, Mount, and then Sterling and Saka either side. So, and Mount wouldn't have been the centre mid there. It would have been Bellingham in there with Rice. So he's obviously played that kind of role before, either as one of the three or with Rice and Mount just ahead. Why doesn't he want to do that now? Is it just because Real Madrid play him as a false nine and it's a bit too much of a departure from what you've been doing all season to drop right back in as an eight? Or is it we don't trust Jude that far back in the team and we need him in the 10 role?
Well, the thing is, even when he's playing in the 10, Bellingham, when you're watching games, that game against Serbia, he was pressing everywhere. He was over helping out Trippier, and then he was like tackling midfield, and then he's making that run from deep to score the header, and then he's over doing something with Kyle Walker. And you're like, so he seems to be able to just go around the pitch where he wants. So I'm really not sure. I'm really not sure. Maybe you're right. Maybe he thinks that he's been playing that false nine and 10 and his attacking presence means that he needs to be up there because we want him to be a source of the goals. But Phil Foden had however many goals from 10. Harry Kane's England's greatest ever goal scorer. Saka scores hatfuls of goals. And I just think a genuine pace out there on that left wing will not only support Trippier in what he's having to do currently, I think it brings the best out of Foden. And I don't think you lose too much from Jude Bellingham's game. There is an argument, right, that Phil Foden maybe shouldn't start for England if he can't play on that left wing role, because there is every so often really, really talented players who just run into someone better in their position. There's also one about Trent Alexander-Arnold. It's almost like we feel so aghast that we can't get Trent into the team, but it's a case of he's going to have to wait until Kyle Walker's gone, because Kyle Walker, arguably other than Gary Neville's, England's best ever right back. So I'm not sure what the answer is going to be long term for that midfield, but it feels like if you want Foden and Bellingham to coexist in an England team, you either need to drop Jude into centre mid, or you come up with some form of new formation akin to what Germany are doing, where they've got Musiala and Wirtz playing in behind a striker, but then you're having to enter into the conversation of Bukayo Saka not starting in your England team. So difficult decisions to be made all around the pitch, certainly in that attacking element. Just touched on Kieran Trippier there. Luke Shaw back in training yesterday, but Gareth Southgate's confirmed that he's not going to take any part in the game against Slovenia, which then maybe makes you think that he's not going to be in a position, if he can't play any part, to start in the last 16. So really starting to run out of time now for Luke Shaw to have any sort of meaningful impression on the tournament.
Yeah, and you just, if this was club football, how long would it be until Luke Shaw was starting? Do you know what I mean? You'd probably have, you know, 30 minutes here, 60 minutes there for a few weeks, and then be starting in like a month's time, considering he hasn't played since February. So it feels like sort of a massive losing battle at the moment, I think. If he can come on and play the second half, the thing is that the game after this is a knockout game. You can't start fucking around with the team too much unless we're like 4-0 up, which is unlikely at the moment. So it's likely that if he's going to play any football, it's going to have to be a cameo at the end of the last 16 game, and then a decision's made whether we put him in from the start in an absolutely massive game against either Italy or Switzerland or someone like that in the quarters. So I'm not sure we'll see him at all.
You? No, I think you're right. No, I completely agree with you. I don't think we'll see him at all. I think they maybe even in the back of their minds probably know that. But on top of all the negativity at the minute, to release that Luke Shaw, the only recognised left-back who travelled, is now going to play no part, would just completely blow up. They'd be like, of course that was going to be the case. He's not played for Man United since February. Why on earth haven't we taken a Ben Chilwell, a Tariq Mitchell, some of the other names that are being mentioned around there? So I think they're almost parked on it at the minute, not releasing it until maybe there's a bit more positivity about for it. And it doesn't help either that Kieran Trippier apparently has been nursing a bit of an injury and got some stuff going on personally as well, if social media is to be believed. So that could be the only other one that maybe there's a surprise change in tonight, is that Trippier is out of the side and they bring in a Joe Gomez or a Konza at left back for it.
I think you're struggling then. I think if Trippier goes out and Shaw's not fit, I'd change the shape at that point, wouldn't you? I'd go to a back three with Walker, Stones and Gueye, put Trent on the right, put someone like Saka or even Gordon. I don't know if Gordon's ever played left wing back. Saka was a left back to begin with.
Saka was a left wing back, wasn't he? And then suddenly you just start, someone realised he was absolutely amazing on right wing.
Yeah, I think he could do a job in there, particularly wing back, and particularly it would actually help us probably as well with the formation if we did that. So if Trippier comes out and Shaw's not ready, I'm not putting in a Konza or a Gomez at left back. Not that they're not good, but just I think we'd have a better chance of affecting games and getting through the knockout stages is with probably more elite players on the pitch in a different shape. Let's hope it doesn't come to that. Or maybe it would be a blessing in disguise. The only thing that might help Luke Shaw is the fact that because you can make five subs now, if you do want to put him in from the start and you're not 100% how he's going to go, you're not shooting yourself in the foot too much because you still have four subs after having to change it with him. So they might have that in the back of their mind to think, well, if we can get him in at the end of the last 16 game, then start him in the quarterfinals. If it goes well, great. If we can tell early on that it's not working, then we've got more than enough room for manoeuvre. But it's a risk either way. But look, this is football. We've had the last few tournaments, we've literally had no injuries really at all. So it was always going to happen at some point. And although Luke Shaw is a really annoying person for it to happen to, at least it's not Kane or Rice or probably Kyle Walker. So not all doom and gloom.
No, definitely not. Right, Con, then let's do it. Both of us predictions for tonight then. If we're saying that it's going to be bang on same 11 other than maybe Gallagher in for Trent, if reliable David Ornstein's to be believed, which I'm sure you will be right with, what are you saying tonight against Slovenia?
Slovenia, I've actually been quite impressed with Slovenia. And do you know they can still top the group as well?
Do you not think that plays into England's hand a bit? I think another thing just to mention, they play a back four. We've played two turgid back threes so far. Big, big centre-halves. Two people banked in front of that three. Wing-backs that are almost playing as a back five, if we're completely honest. I think it'd be interesting to see a team who have to go out and try and win against England or are trying to win against England with a back four, what we could do against them.
Yeah. And if it is that kind of dynamic, then you'd expect us to win handsomely, I think, because if it's fire with fire, both teams wanting to win the game, you'd think and hope outgun them. So on that note, I'll go 3-0 and I'll go Harry Kane brace and another Jude goal.
Agree with 3-0, Kane, Saka, and someone off the bench to score, either Bowen or Anthony Gordon, to come on and grab one late where they run through while Slovenia are trying to press to attack us. But yeah, it'd be a lovely result to have that. Hopefully get another goal for Kane, get some players into form, shut this narrative up about negativity, be like, look, we got 7 points from the group and we've now hopefully got a favourable route through to the final. And see how Lineker and Mika Richards and Shearer react to that. Just looking ahead to the permutations of the group, we spoke about a Switzerland, Italy in a quarterfinal. Looks before there that we might have the likes of like an Austria or a Slovakia, depending on how the rest of the results go today, tomorrow. But I think if you were to offer to England, Austria, Slovakia, and then Switzerland, Italy through to the semi-finals of the Euros, you'd absolutely snap anyone's hand off for that.
You would. But I will say a lot of these, I'll put it respectfully, lesser nations in terms of footballing ability that you'd normally expect to be the cannon fodder have been quite good. But Austria looked good, I think. Slovakia haven't looked bad either. Like a lot of these, even looking ahead, like Switzerland, they look really strong. We've already played Denmark and Serbia, who've obviously given us problems. So I don't think when we get through, we're obviously likely, if we win the group, we're obviously likely to get someone on paper that looks favourable. But I think that'll be a tougher game than what maybe people are imagining. And that's why we need to get some momentum with the Slovenia game tonight and get some positivity around us. But yeah, of course, if we win the group, hopefully we can get a on paper favourable time. We can crack on into the knockout stages like we normally do. If we don't win the group, it's Germany, isn't it?
Yeah, I think there's a couple options where if we were to finish second, it might be straight to Germany and then third, or maybe third straight to Germany. And then you've got a second place where you'd play a team in second. I think the one thing to call out is winning the group, regardless of the opposition, puts us in this second half of the bracket of the knockout phases. And it looks like at the moment, that's very much the one to be in. I mean, there's even a possibility that in the 5 o'clock games beforehand that Holland could top the group and that would send France to the other side of the group, meaning you'd have Germany, Spain, Portugal, France all in the other half of the bracket and we'd be left with Holland, Italy, Switzerland as your main protagonists.
Are they playing today, Holland?
Yeah, 5 o'clock, France, yes. Poland and Holland versus the other team in their group, which has escaped me. But they would then need to, I think they've, same goal difference, scored one more goal, Holland. I thought rather cruelly had a goal disallowed against France as well. I don't think the keeper was getting there. But yeah, if they can better France's result, who don't look like they can put the ball in the back of the net, I'd love to know what the local French media are saying about the French side, who are on 4 points and not looking their free flowing best, and not really got Mbappe into the tournament, albeit he has had that injury for the second game. I'd love to know what they're thinking. But yeah, if Holland can top that group, which we'll know by time we play, then that would potentially be France, the other side of the group as well.
It's weird that though, isn't it? Because if you're Holland, you don't really want to top the group by the sounds of things. It sounds like you're just going in the worst side of the draw. It's like the when we played Belgium.
Played Belgium and we both played our second strings and we lost 1-0 with Januzaj, but we went through to favourable half of the draw.
We had Colombia, Sweden and then Croatia. I haven't seen the permutations for Holland, but I'd much rather be in our side of the draw. But then same with, I can't imagine France thinking like that. France just a bit more ruthless, aren't they? But Holland might be thinking, let's just get through tonight. And it's not the end of the world if we don't top the group. But that would be interesting to see. But I'd much rather play Holland in the semi-final than France. So hopefully the Dutch can maybe top that group.
Well, we've obviously got Group C and Group D games today, but we've had Group A and Group B over the last couple of nights. And late drama in all of them. Starting with Group A, Switzerland, who obviously we've spoken about, depending on their game against Italy, which I think is now the first confirmed fixture of the last 16. They're someone who we could potentially meet in the quarterfinals. They were moments away from beating Germany, took a late Füllkrug goal header to draw that game and send Germany through. Otherwise, we'd have had Germany in the second half of the group. But Switzerland, which you just mentioned earlier, look half decent side so far.
Yeah, they do. Granit Xhaka's been getting plaudits, hasn't he? Who's someone that sort of flattered to deceive a little bit in the Premier League. But these players always seem to do better when they're not in the Premier League. And then they turn up at European competitions and they're world beaters. I guarantee he has a 9 out of 10 against England if we play them. That's for sure. I don't think there's any... It actually feels a little bit like, to me, there could be a Greece in this tournament. Like in 2004, whereby... Like, I know there's some good sides, but I'm not sure... I think the gap is smaller at the moment between the good sides and the worst sides, smaller than it normally would be for some reason.
Yeah.
Like Portugal were good, but Ronaldo's 40, so is Pepe. France have got Mbappe with his face hanging off, and a lot of their players are quite old now. England obviously are struggling to get going a little bit. Spain look good, but in a different way, and have a much younger team now as well. So, and Italy are nowhere near what they were even 3 years ago. So I think there's a good opportunity for the likes of Switzerland and teams like that to maybe go further than what maybe they'd have expected to. And it's obviously up to the likes of England to try and stop that. But yeah, that would be an interesting game, Switzerland-Italy, if that is a confirmed last 16 game. It wouldn't surprise me one bit if Switzerland went through, because I didn't think Italy were up to much last night, did you?
No, not at all. No, I really fancy that Italy game. I was concerned at one stage that they might have lost to Croatia yesterday and Croatia come through. I think Croatia have aged, but they're another side who just seem to have had given England a difficult time. They obviously beat us in that World Cup. We did go past them in the group stages of the previous Euros, but they've just seemed to have those moments where a midfield of like Brozovic, Kovacic, Modric can just turn up at any moment. So I was happy that Italy got that late equaliser. I'd much, much rather play Italy. But as you say, wouldn't be surprised at all if it was Switzerland who are waiting in the quarterfinals if we do win our group and get through. I said the other team in the France, Holland, Poland group, it's Austria, obviously, who you just touched on, who've looked really strong. So, yeah. We're talking about Netherlands potentially topping the group, but Austria could as well. They're 1 point behind Netherlands and France. They've got Netherlands tonight. They'd leapfrog Netherlands if they go through. You're expecting France to beat Poland, who've got 0 points. But Austria could be the side that finish in first or second, which would mean Netherlands could become a viable last 16 option.
For England?
Yeah.
So we're thinking we're going to get third in that group, are we?
Well, it all depends, because we play D, E, F third place. It will be the lowest ranked side. They're in D, Netherlands. So it would be then dependent on if a team from E or F made it through as a third place team. So looking at it as it is currently, you've got Austria as the current top ranked third place team, then Slovakia, then Hungary, then Slovenia, then Croatia and Czech Republic. So I think as it currently stands, we'd have Austria because you've only got Czech Republic from the lower groups that would be in there. So yeah, we will have to wait and see. But it is a potential option where we could have Netherlands in the last 16. But that would be relying on A, B, C and D being the third place teams that go through, and nothing from E and F.
And Holland probably losing tonight, which hopefully they won't do. If France and Holland win tonight, we can't. I mean, if France lost tonight, can they come third?
Yeah.
So we're all France and Holland tonight then, aren't we, for 5 o'clock?
Indeed, yeah.
Because we don't want to end up being an absolute cart horse in the last 16.
And then just want to finish on a bit of a high note. 100 minutes on the clock. Hungary run through, cut the ball back, stick it past Angus Gunn, and albeit might have some of the best fans in the competition, but Scotland on the plane home.
They were terrible, I thought, the whole tournament. I thought, particularly the Germany game and then that game against Hungary that they needed to win. By the way, there's not putting their fans were amazing. The atmosphere they were creating before the games with the national anthem and stuff, unbelievable. And obviously we've been speaking to Ross, who's on the ground out in Germany, and he said that you just can't move for Scotland fans and they're all in good spirits and stuff. And I know it's their first tournament in 24 years or whatever it was, but the team, I mean, honestly, I think they are the worst team in the tournament. I know they got a point against Switzerland, but I thought they were really let themselves down, a lot of them. I don't know whether it was the manager, the shape, that I don't watch an awful lot of Scotland, but they've got Robertson's a good player. McTominay's a good player. I like Che Adams. John McGinn's a good player. They were not playing like a team that had, you know, five or six top kind of Premier League-esque players. They looked like a League One team to me. And I think Hungary, probably, if they're a little bit more positive, could have done a bit more against them. But obviously, they've got their 3 points. I don't know if that's going to be enough for them to go through. But I will say, I thought Scotland was so, so poor. And I think they'll kick themselves looking back at it now. I think what probably epitomises it the most is that red card that Matey got in the first game, which was just the sort of stuff you'd see on a playground somewhere, just 2 foot in the back of someone. But it's a shame for them, because they were good value in the tournament in terms of creating buzz. But on the football pitch, absolutely shocking. embarrassing.
Yeah, they were. Hungary might be enough for them. England beat Slovenia tonight, and Slovenia do finish third in our group, then Hungary would be above them. Croatia, actually, in conceding that last-minute goal against Italy, they need England to pulverise Slovenia tonight. So they're both on 2 points, but they're 3 goals worse off Croatia after heavy defeat against Spain to start with. So we need to beat Slovenia by 3 clear goals, which will mean Croatia would leapfrog into one of those third place teams. So they'd be desperate for a real big England performance tonight to carry on through in the group. But yeah, might be enough for Hungary, that late goal.
I'm not sure how I feel about being able to get through on 2 points. There's no way you should be getting through on 2 points. It means you've drawn two and lost one. That's not good enough to get to the knockouts of a major tournament. That needs rethinking for me, whether it's just the top two from each group go through. But you shouldn't be sat there on 2 draws with a chance of going through, I don't think. But there we go.
Now, they spoke a little bit about it was Scotland, where they were on a point, and if they'd have not gone completely gung-ho against Hungary, they'd have been on 2 points and maybe just currently still just hanging in there on one of those 4 places. Steve Clark said, look, it's not enough. We know 4 points is what you need to go through here, but it looks like it might actually be 3, maybe the last team on 2 on goal difference to get through. So look, they probably had to gamble. They had a couple chances towards the end and maybe, you know, on a different day would have won and been sat on 4 points and they're going through. But yeah, you're probably right. It don't feel great, does it, to be able to draw 2 games and lose one and get through to the last 16. Look, Laurie, that's all we got time for today. Obviously, here's hoping that England get the job done and do it well tonight. And we'll be back before the weekend where we'll have our last 16 game. By then, we'll know who we've got. We'll know the route through to the final and we'll talk it all through. But pleasure as always. Cheers, mate.
Cheers. 1, 2, 3.